Everybody, I am, as you've already guessed, covering for David tonight. He will pick back up in Mark when he returns, Lord willing, next week, next Sunday evening. He gave me the option of just picking up where he left off last week and continuing in Mark, or just picking something on my own, and I was very tempted to pick Mark because then I could use all his notes, which would have been really nice. But he does such a good job. I've really enjoyed his class. And so I probably couldn't do what he has done justice covering Mark. So he's going to pick up next week. So tonight we're going to talk a little bit about Christian relationships, our Christian relationships specifically. And I hope we had an entire quarter not very long ago on one another. That was kind of the theme, one another, and all the things. The Bible has a lot to say about how we act one to another. And this is very similar material. I hope it's not too soon from when we covered that. I told Josh this morning after his class down the hall that he covered some of the same things that we're going to talk about tonight. So there'll be a little bit of overlap for those of you that were in that class as well. And we certainly can't do the topic of our Christian relationships justice in one class setting. So we're going to hit on what we can. We're going to touch on five aspects of our relationship with our brothers and sisters in Christ. And for each of these, we'll only probably scratch the surface tonight. We could probably pick any one of them and spend an entire class period on them. But I'm going to touch on these five, time permitting. And depending on how talkative you guys are tonight. So feel free to chime in. These things are going to sound very familiar to you, right? We read about these things. We hear about these things from the pulpit and in classes. But there's never a time that we can't be reminded and gain from hearing about them again. Many of us are parents in here, right? How many times do you remind your kids of something, or your parents remind you of something, right? Even though you know, when as a parent, you remind your kids to do something or be careful or be safe, whatever it is. You know they're going to, but you still feel inclined to remind them, right? In football, I can't help it. I have to give a football analogy. In football, you know, when we teach a new play after we've taught it, we don't just toss it aside and never practice it again, right? We constantly remind our kids, this is how we run this play. This is who we block. This is where, you know, we're going to hit the play. You know, this is how we're going to block the defense. All those things, we constantly remind them how to do that play so they will get better and better at it. Peter, in his second letter, he opens up verse 12 of chapter 1. So I will always remind you of these things, even though you know them and are firmly established in the truth you now have. So he knew that his readers knew these things, these truths, but he was going to remind them anyway. And then he closes this particular letter, chapter 3, verse 1. Dear friends, this is now my second letter to you. I have written both of them as reminders to stimulate you to wholesome thinking. So we can never have enough reminders to help us in remembering and then help us in our growth. And interesting enough, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, these five things all kind of fit together. It's not there's this and then there's that over here. they all really fit together and tie together, and we'll see that as we go through some of these verses. So just quickly before we start on serving others, I think another benefit for us, and something that's really important for all of us in our spiritual growth, is self-reflection. And this has actually become a really big topic in the business world. As a business leader, you need to be self-aware and self-reflect on your strengths and weaknesses. And regardless of where we're at in our walk with Christ, regardless where we're at in our maturity, whether a new convert or, you know, have been in the church all of our lives, we need to continue to grow. And that comes through self-reflection, you know, not to beat ourselves up that, you know, I'm not doing this right or I'm not doing that right, but just where am I at and where can I be better? And so covering things like this in our relationships with others, I think also helps us self-reflect. The verses you see up there, we're not gonna read these verses, but they are just a few verses that touch on self-reflection. You know, 2 Corinthians 13:5, we're told to examine ourselves, to look inward. Romans 12:2, we're told not to be conformed to the world, but be transformed. And you know, we have to understand where we're at in that. Are we conforming to the world? Are we transforming ourselves in Christ Jesus? Philippians 4:8, Paul tells us, you know, he lists these things that are important, and he says we need to think on these things and we need to reflect on them. Paul also, you know, regarding the Lord's Supper, he tells us we're to examine ourselves, right, before we partake. So all these things, I think, are worthwhile and great for self-reflection and great reminders as well. Okay, serving others. Let's start, and I'm not going to have these up, so please feel free to turn with me to these verses as we go through them. Serving others, we're going to start with Philippians 2, 3, and 4. One confession I'll make, and I don't usually do this, and I didn't do it on purpose this time. The passages I'm going to read, I'm probably going to be flipping in and out of different translations, and that was not on purpose. I put this together on three different computers and had different versions open on those, and by the time I realized it, I was afraid to go back and try to fix it all and mess something up and make it worse. So there are a couple we're going to talk about wording of different translations, but I think I've got a few ESVs and a few NIVs and an NASB possibly mixed in here. All right, Philippians 2, 3, and 4. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, rather in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. How does Paul there describe our relationship with others?
Selfless.
Yes. Absolutely. So, and it, by contrast, he starts, you know, he gives a contrast there, right? He says, don't do it out of selfish ambition. Don't do it for yourself. And for us to be able to serve others, that's got to happen, right? If we're focused on us and what we want out of life and out, whatever the case may be, right, we're going to have a hard time serving others because we're trying to serve ourselves instead. How about Romans 12:10? Philippians Verse 10, be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Another translation, which I have up on the slide, outdo one another in showing honor. Anybody have another translation that words that any differently? Love one another with brotherly affection. How do we do that? How do we outdo one another in showing honor? How do we honor someone above ourselves? Yes, absolutely. It kind of goes back to the previous verse, doesn't it? If our thoughts and our minds are on others and how we can honor them, then that's gonna lead to us serving them, however the case may be. Good. All right, John. Better advance there. John 13. 3. I've got 17 on there. We'll stop at 15. In our reading. All right, starting in verse 3. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. And after he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? And Jesus replied, you do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand. No, said Peter, you shall never wash my feet. Side note, reading about Peter and Paul really makes me have hope. I don't know about you, but anyway, Peter was a little impulsive. Okay, continuing on. Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Then Lord Simon Peter replied, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. Jesus answered, those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean. And you are clean, though not every one of you, for he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said not everyone was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I've done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. So this is certainly a common passage when people talk about serving others, right? Jesus taking the time to wash his apostles' feet. And he says it in the passage, right? He is setting an example for them. He tells them also that they should do likewise to each other. What's another example or a lesson outside of Jesus showing that we should serve others? Any other takes that come out of that passage for you? Certainly the primary is Jesus showing that we should serve others. But one other thing kind of stands out to me. We need to allow ourselves to be served. Are we guilty of that sometimes? Not wanting to be served? for whatever the reason. I mean, we could talk at length for the whys. But Peter's example there of not wanting to be served. And so, I don't know, that stands out to me, I think, because I'm guilty of it, probably more than anything. Are we doing a disservice to them by not allowing it, right? I think, too, we have, and again, this is more personal. I don't want to, you know, inflect my feelings on you, but we don't allow ourselves to be vulnerable amongst our brothers and sisters enough, I think, and just let our guard down. I know that's my problem, certainly. We can all be better at that, I think, probably. Okay, I'm going to have to pick up the pace here a little bit. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 12, 14 through 27. I'm going to go ahead and paraphrase this one. Feel free to turn and look at that, and just for time's sake, and to pick up a little speed. Paul here is speaking to the Corinthians. Again, the church at Corinth had many issues, right? One of which was who was most important, for maybe a good way to put it. And so he likens the church to the body, the physical body, and he talks about the different parts. And while some don't seem very important, all of them are important. And it is the same way in the church. Every member of the body is very important. And going down, let's see, I want to, down in verse 23, and the parts that we think less honorable, we treat with special honor. Unpresentable, we treat with special modesty. So the things that don't seem very important, we treat as special, or we should treat as special. And so that can apply for us as well in serving others, right? We have to remember that everyone is important, that we all serve an important role in the church, and we should all be treated with special honor. Let's go to James chapter 3. Starting in verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every vile practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. So here James is speaking of earthly wisdom and heavenly wisdom. And a previous passage we read mentioned that selfish ambition. That's that earthly wisdom that causes us to think about self. It's not too hard to look out into the world, especially if you're on social media at all, and look what is preached there, right? It's all about me. It's all about what I can get. It's all about whether I have been wronged or not and what I should do about it. And that's that earthly wisdom, I think, that's mentioned there. But if we have that heavenly wisdom, And again, James lists in verse 17 the things that come along with that heavenly wisdom. And if we apply that to our lives, it will lead us into serving others, I believe. All right, some thoughts and discussion questions for you guys. What are some situations that we should place our brothers and sisters ahead of ourselves? We need to treat them like they're more important than us. Yes, absolutely. What else?
In their hour of, say, grief, need.
When there are specific needs that need to be met, right? Absolutely. That's a great example. Any others? Did you look at my slides? We're going to come to that in a minute. Absolutely. We may need to serve others that have sinned and need our forgiveness and our help in righting whatever wrong occurred. Probably not going to get to those slides. We have 15 minutes, but we'll try. All right, next question. And this is, if you think back to some of the things some of the passages we've covered, what qualities help us achieve service to others?
Humility.
Humility. That was actually came up quite often, right, in the passages we read. It requires humility, certainly. What else? Empathy? Good.
Don't be afraid to reach out.
Not fearful. Can I rephrase it as that? Not fearful. Another one of my problems is fear. Letting fear take over my decision making, right? That's a really good one. Anything else before we move on? Courage, absolutely. I think along those lines, and it goes a little bit into the fear of failure, right? What if I try to serve others and I don't get it right? And we got to have that courage to go ahead and do it anyway. Excellent. Okay, I'm going to skip my last serving others slide so we can get to at least one other topic. Encouraging others. Let's turn to 1 Thessalonians 5. Verse 14. I guess the good news is the next time I get asked to teach a class, I'll have my material already prepared because I'm not going to get very far. 1 Thessalonians 5:14. And we urge you, brothers and sisters, warn those who are idle and disruptive, encourage the disheartened, help the weak, be patient with everyone. Whose translation has something different than disheartened? That's the NIV, I think. Anybody have anything else there? Encourage the disheartened.
Faint-hearted.
Timid. All right. So, what are some things that can cause discouragement? We all get discouraged at times, right? What are some things that could cause discouragement? Say it again.
Failure.
What else?
Rejection.
Yes. One or two more.
Overload,
too much on our plate. That doesn't ever happen to me. Here's a tough one. What are some things we might do that would discourage a brother? Speaking before we think. Rejection is another one we mentioned. That's something that can discourage. Well, we can cause rejection sometimes, can't we? And certainly I'm not implying we do any of these things on purpose, but sometimes we can discourage a brother or sister by our actions because maybe we're not intentional enough in what we're doing or saying. It could be our body language. It could be something we said. It could be something we didn't say, right? That could potentially discourage a brother or sister. Flipping around on the positive, how can we encourage each other? We all need encouragement, right? Compliment. Give me some specific examples. I know some people that would disagree with that. You guys have peeked at my slides. We're going to talk about rejoicing here. Well, no, the next time I teach a class, I guess we'll talk about rejoicing because we're not going to get to it today. Absolutely. Just some kind words. It doesn't have to take anything, right, inspirational necessary. Just some kind words. Let me ask you this. Is discouragement always visible? Can we always tell when somebody's discouraged? Because again, I don't have a poker face, but a lot of time I am pretty good at hiding discouragement, trying to hide. Maybe I don't hide it. Maybe I try to hide it. But yeah, sometimes I won't name any names. I don't want to embarrass somebody. But there was a time, it's several years ago, I had a lot going on. I was a little discouraged. Things weren't going exactly like I thought they should. And somebody came up and it was a 30-second conversation. And they complimented me and said some nice things. And the timing was perfect. It was amazing how much better I felt. And probably, honestly, I was feeling a little sorry for myself on top of all of it, right? Why is this all this happening? And that person, I don't think, had any idea what a huge difference they made in my day and my demeanor and my mindset and attitude by that 30-second conversation. So we should always, just like we should always be looking for ways to serve others, we should always be looking for ways to encourage others. Because you never know how badly that person may need that encouragement. Absolutely. And we're not going to get to a passage today. I've got a passage regarding that we're going to touch on that. But absolutely, we need to be sincere and in our concern for others and in providing that encouragement. And I think that also is going to help us discern discouragement, be able to see it easier when we have that type of relationship. I love examples. I'm an example guy. That's how I learn. A great example of encouragement is Barnabas, right? And I'm going to summarize. We've got about 6 or 7 minutes, and I want to get to at least a couple more slides. So, but just touching on these verses in Acts regarding Barnabas, Acts 4:36, he's referred to as the son of encouragement. The apostles called him this. This was not his name. Barnabas was not his name. But he was so good at encouraging others that they gave him this nickname, basically, meaning son of encouragement. Acts 9:26 and 27, this is when Saul, not long after his conversion, comes to Jerusalem, and no one will have anything to do with him, right? All they knew him as is this guy that persecuted Christians. And who went to him? What an encouragement. Barnabas, verse 27, but Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles. So just think about being in Saul's shoes at that time, and no one will have anything to do with you. But this guy, Barnabas, came up and introduced you to the apostles. Acts 11, well, I'm going to skip that one. Yeah, I'm going to skip that one. Let's go to Acts 15. Because this one, again, this is where Paul and Barnabas get in a dispute over whether to take Mark with them on their missionary journey. And Barnabas was determined to take Mark. And they split, and Barnabas took Mark, and they went a different direction. But imagine how much help that was for Mark. We learn later in multiple passages that Paul and Mark made up, so to speak. I mean, Paul has some wonderful things to say about Mark in some of his letters. But what would have happened if Barnabas would have just gone on with Paul and said, well, sorry, Mark, you're out. We don't know, right? But I just have to imagine that would have been a great encouragement for Mark, because he knew he messed up on the first journey, right? And Barnabas stood up for him and certainly encouraged him and took him on the missionary journey, and he continued his Christian walk. All right, gonna skip that. Let's go to patience. We all have great patience, right? Galatians 5:22 and 23, the fruits of the Spirit, the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. The Amplified Version, I don't use it often, but I liked what it had to say about patience. It has patience, but then it says in brackets after patience, it's not the ability to wait, but how we act while we're waiting. And that's really true. Patience is really how we act while we're waiting, not just the fact that we're waiting. And that's very telling, I think. How about 1 Corinthians 3:4-8? This actually touches on many aspects of our relationship with our brothers and sisters in Christ. And this will be the last thing we get to, so I'm going to hit on a couple of points, not just patience, but 1 Corinthians 13, starting in verse 4. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. So It opens up right there at the start of that passage. Love is patient, right? And love is one of those things. We're going to talk about it in several of these next few aspects, right? It's one of the key qualities that we need for all of these things. For serving others, we need to have love. To be patient with others, we need to have love. Larry talked about sincerity and encouraging others. If we have that true love for our brothers and sisters, we're going to encourage them because we're going to want to see them be encouraged and be uplifted. Verse 5, and this was a later section, but I'll go ahead and touch on it since we're out of time. It keeps no record of wrongs. We're all really good at that, right? It keeps no records of wrongs. If we truly have that brotherly love for each other, that Christian love for each other, we don't keep track of rights and wrongs. Thank you for your time. I went kind of fast, but I've got great material for our next time I get asked. Hopefully I've got great material. Thank you for your attention, your comments. I appreciate it.